Welcome into the What's Up Peoria podcast, where we are dedicated to introducing you to the people, places, and events that happen in our amazing city. This is where those who work in Peoria can connect with those who live in Peoria. We hope you discover something new with us. Here are your hosts, Jenny and Patrick, on the What's Up Peoria podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the What's Up Peoria podcast. I am here, as usual, with my co-host, Commissioner Gordon. Commissioner Gordon, go ahead and say hi to all the folks out there.
Hello, Peoria, and hello, Poet Master Patrick.
I am super excited about today's episode because, as you may or may not have already heard, your very own city of Peoria has announced a new partnership with Grand Canyon University's Colangelo College of Business to launch what they are calling the GCU Entrepreneur Training Program, which is a free, that's right, you heard me, free, the magic word, four-month hands-on training initiative intended to provide all you Peoria entrepreneurs with the tools, resources, and guidance you need to innovate, scale, and thrive in today's competitive business environment. Today, we're talking to Peoria's program instructor, Robert Vera, the founding director of Canyon Ventures Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, and professor of Innovation and Entrepreneurship. Welcome to the show, Robert. Say hi to the city of Peoria.
Thank you, guys. Hey, city of Peoria. Great to be here.
Super, super excited to have you today. What an awesome partnership. I'm really looking forward to digging in. But before we do that, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself, Robert, how you ended up as the founding director of, of Canyon Ventures Center and got involved with this program?
Yeah, I was an entrepreneur. So I had a company started in 2007, exited in 2016. So knew the process of being an entrepreneur, had made every mistake you can make, I think twice. And
There are times the charm.
Yeah, but still was able to really have a great experience, a great company, exited the company, and then wanted to do something. I'm not sure I wanted to start another business at that point, but I wanted to be able to equip entrepreneurs with the lessons that I had gotten as an entrepreneur. So about the same time, GCU was looking for someone to lead their Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship. So I thought it was really, wow, this is a great fit.
Timing is everything.
So I applied 7 months later. I'm like, you guys, are you sure yet? 7 months later, they hired me and they said, look, we have this idea. We're not completely sure what this is going to look like. Mm-hmm. Here are some of the principal tenants. Let's try it, see what happens. By the way, you have no staff and no budget. So I was like, perfect. Where do I sign? So that was the original. That was August 5th, 2019. We went through COVID. But what was really powerful about that is that, look, I believe that entrepreneurs transform the world, mm-hmm. right? We're the ones that take all the risk to solve the problems of this world, right? Yeah. We're the ones that will hire. We're the ones that will do all the heavy lifting, take all the risk to develop solutions that make the world a better place. And I thought, wow, what an amazing opportunity to be involved in this at a university level. We can encourage students to come with their ideas, help wrap around them the what to do first, what to do next to be successful, and marry the center with our curriculum so that now you have a place to actually test what you're building, what you created. Mm. So that was the origins of it. Along the way, I started teaching. So I teach there at in the Colangelo College of Business. I also teach at the University of Antioquia in Medellin, Colombia, on the same system of entrepreneurship. Many people think that entrepreneurship is, let's try it and see if it works. Really, there's a formula. There's a process. And if you understand that, you de-risk your development of your company. So that's what I love to bring to Peoria. This is so exciting for me. I hope you can hear it in my voice.
Oh, yeah.
This is so exciting for me to join with entrepreneurs here. I mean, this is it. Like, you're a brotherhood of, in the sisterhood of entrepreneurs, right?
I love it.
So it's awesome to be here, to be able to do this. And I hope that we get, people ask, well, maybe they're lifestyle type businesses. What's our home-based businesses? I'm like, look, we want them all.
Right.
Like, we want to bring them all in. And I know that we'll give them the right tools, the right information, the right resources. Tell them what to do first, what to do next to be successful.
That's fantastic. I can definitely hear the passion in your voice. So you mentioned you were involved in business beforehand. What kind of business was it, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I had a health tech company. So a health tech company, we worked with corporations to help their employees actually realize their best performance through health coaching, using technology. So it was really fun to do that. So I worked with corporations across the United States, mostly here in the Valley. And then, you know, went through, I think that one of the challenges was, is that I started in 2007. And I don't know if some of your listeners may remember 2008. Through 2015.
Yeah. It was a bit of a market crisis.
Yeah. So it was, I had clients that were literally going out of business. So to work with them and to grow a company in that environment was really challenging. So I say that was the best and worst time of my life. At the time, I had two small kids. I left a career in finance.
Left a solid job for an exciting opportunity, but at the same time, you didn't have the safety net. So, yeah.
Yeah, wing walking, right? Mm-hmm. So, and the rule of wing walking, don't let go of one wing till you have firm control of the other. I definitely did not have firm control of the other. So left that, went into, I had two small kids. And, and starting with, this is the concept. When you start early, you have your own funds to do it. And, I had two kids at the time. Matthew and Haley, and I would say, my kids have got this worst habit. They want to eat twice a day, at least twice a day. How am I going to feed these kids? But that experience going through 2008 to about 2015 is when we really started to recover here in Arizona. By the way, Arizona had it much worse than anywhere else because $1 in $3 were generated vis-a-vis real estate. And that's the reason why I wanted to diversify out of real estate, right? Now we see of manufacturing, but point is that experience of navigating that whole catastrophe of businesses going under, all that stuff, no funding, no financing, trying to figure it out my own, was the best education, the best experience of my life. Now, when anything, COVID was really not a big deal for me.
Nothing.
Yeah, because you already been through the ringer. So hey, you're like, this. I've been there. I know how to deal with this.
Right. And so when people freak out, for me, I'm like, hey, I have this idea that calmness is contagious. So when people are freaking out, and entrepreneurs freak out all the time, you're like, hey, easy, we got this. This is what's going to happen. Here's how we deal with this. So it's really, I'm so grateful for that opportunity to get, just absolutely hammered all the time to figure out okay, now I know what to do when these things happen. So hopefully I can bring some of that here to the city of Peoria and to the great citizens here. There will eventually be, I hope, come to this training.
You mentioned the word risk a few times. I know that's one of the things that keeps people from, getting involved in entrepreneurship or even thinking about starting their own business. I have two young kids myself, just like you. And, you're worried about putting food on the table, and you do. It's kind of a little bit of a step off the cliff to start your own business. And so these courses, what it sounds like is they're designed to help you minimize that risk and help you manage that risk.
Exactly. We're going to de-risk it for you. So we're going to show you how to do this. So you don't have to leave your full-time job to start something. I mean, I did, but you don't have to. In fact, I recommend not doing that. And also, many times we will see that entrepreneurs, when they start a company or have an idea, they can't. It's something akin to their work. Their company. It's a solution that improves or drives revenues or reduces cost. So oftentimes they can say to their company, hey, I've got this idea. I'm thinking about doing it on my own. Would you want to be my first client? And oftentimes the company says, yes, how will this work? But the idea in this training program, we will give you language, tools, resources, ideas of how to de-risk your idea. And we'll get into this a little bit more, but the poem we're going to share at the end is really an anthem for that, right? A call to this, about risk. It's about how you evaluate risk or how you think risk. I think about risk is really important, right? So for me, the risk of not doing something seems much more scary than the risk of I don't know, I'm too afraid to do it, right? So the risk of not doing it is much more scary to me.
Yeah, the opportunity you never took, the one that got away, right?
That's the one, right? But it's only a movie.
Yeah, well, it kind of comes back to what you were saying before about entrepreneurs and innovators being the people who are kind of driving the forces of change. It takes courage. It does.
Yeah. So, what exactly are you bringing to the city of Peoria with the training program? Like, give us some actual meat on the bone of what you're going to be bringing to those entrepreneurs for their toolkit.
Yeah, thanks. So the training comes in different parts, and it's over every month is a different part. So we start with the ideation stage.
Okay.
And the ideation stage, first, I think one of the biggest mistakes I see entrepreneurs make is that they have a great solution. They came up with this great idea. Mm-hmm. The problem with that is that that idea may not solve a problem. So you're looking for a problem to solve with your idea, or the problem's not big enough. So great, this solves the problem for eight people. So what we do is we have a methodology. We show people how to fall in love with the problem or a problem and really examine the wreckage of that problem, not just the external part of the problem. That's the part we all see. But the internal part, how that problem makes us feel. Because we're buying something based on the way we feel many times. And then the philosophical part of this, like, why is the world like this? Why does this problem exist like this? When you do that and you're able to communicate those three parts to somebody who's experienced that problem, when you're able to say very succinctly, hey, I understand you're having this problem. I understand this is the way it makes you feel. And look, I agree with you. The world shouldn't be this way. At that exact moment, do you know what happens? You trust me.
Mm.
Because I get you.
Yeah. So, well, because it's like you're not just trying to put a Band-Aid on it. You're actually trying to find out, okay, what actually made it bleed? What actually is the source? And so you're going further back. So rather than just being like, oh, here's an easy fix. It's like, no, I really see you and I can see where the problem actually began so I can give you real solutions.
Yeah, so that's the first part of it. And then the innovation part. Innovation and entrepreneurship are different, right?
Okay.
So innovation is the idea that, you know, may turn into a company. It's the idea. Let me give you a good example. So one of the people I'd met along the way was the guy who started GoPro. Mm. And he told me about, I said, well, how did this happen? He's like, yeah, so one day I'm surfing in Australia. And I see all these Aussies, they're out there surfing, and they got their cameras in plastic bags taped to their wrist.
Yeah, I don't see that working out very well.
And he's like, why do you guys have cameras taped to your wrist? And he's like, and they're like, because, mate, we want to get, you know, pictures and videos of us surfing. And he's like, wow, what a great idea. So he decided that this was a great idea. That it is a big problem. It's not just for surfers, but anybody wants to capture this. And this is when Facebook was big and people were posting their videos. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember, if you guys ever had a GoPro, the cameras weren't that great.
Right.
They weren't that great. They're hard to use, right?
We borrowed one from a friend, you know, so it's like someone else had it and we're like, okay, we'll try it out on a vacation.
Yeah, but they were hard to use. They weren't that great, but they had the housing that attached to something so you could actually record the experience. So he saw that as an innovation. Hey, look, I can solve this problem. Like, you don't have to tape your bag to your wrist. You can put this anywhere. And that became the innovation that got wrapped into a company that became his entrepreneurship endeavor. So there's so many ideas that I know your citizens will have, and people in Peoria have, of one, coming up with something totally new. And I'll give you some examples today. Or improving something that exists. Okay. Can I give you one more?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do.
You guys have seen it. It was started by a GCU undergraduate and MBA. He came to me early on. It's called a Noggin Boss. It's an oversized baseball hat. Have you seen these things?
No, I have not. I can't say I have.
It's a baseball hat that's like, I should have brought one, but it wouldn't make sense because your audience can't see it.
Right. So,
but envision this. It's a baseball hat, but 10 times the size of a normal baseball hat. It's fitted in. So he brought it to me. His name is Gabe Cooper. He's from the West Valley, from Arizona. And now it's absolutely huge. I know your audience, if you look around, you'll see Noggin Bosses. You see them at every NFL game. They have contracts with NFL, NBA, everybody. So when he brought it to me, he said, hey, this is a Noggin Boss. And I looked at it. I was like, wow, this is really interesting. He's like, I'm like, so give me your what problem? He's like, hey, you know, there's never been an innovation in stadium promotion since the big number one foam finger.
Since the big hand.
Yeah.
Now you're going with the big hat.
Yes.
And right then I got it. I was like, you're right. There's not. And then we look when we bring companies into our Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, we look for three things: a new company, a new product or service, or in a totally new category of company. Because when you own the category, you own the market. GoPro owned that market, right? Everyone says GoPro. So yeah. I said, Gabe, his name is Gabe Cooper. I said, Gabe, this is fantastic. I love it. It's a new category. It's personal promotional attire. And then when you see them, like on the games, mm-hmm. the Jumbotron has your picture up there, more right. so than the people advertising who are paying for it, right? So I said, Gabe, this is not a oversized baseball hat. This is the smallest billboard in the world. Mm. This is brilliant.
And okay, yeah, because I saw something the other day where I was like, it looks like a baseball hat, but it's bigger. Like, it's kind of like the cheese head, but a baseball cap shape. And I was trying to figure out what I was looking at. So thank you for, now I know.
You got it. Like, so fantastic, right? But that's an innovation. So there's already baseball hats out there, but no mm-hmm. one's going to look at your baseball hat, you know, in the stadium, right? But if it's 10 times bigger and it's got a crazy logo on it, right? Now, everybody's going to want to see it, right? So that's an innovation yeah. in a new category. So those are some of the things that we've brought into GCU. We currently, and just want to, you know, shameless self-promotion, I just want to tell you a little bit about GCU's Innovation Center. We currently are the only university in the entire world that has recruited and has now two Shark Tank winners. So ABC Shark Tank, we have yes. Noggin Boss got a deal from Damon John. And this first season, this episode, this year, 2020, basically 2025, 1920, their multi-use apparel. It's a jacket, a puffy jacket that turns into a tote bag, a vest. They got a deal from Robert. So we have two companies that we recruited because new idea, new company, new category. It occurred to me that Naga Boss kind of looks for that stuff too. But we have two companies in our center that are part of, that won on Shark Tank. They are going to come to speak to the folks in our program, in our training program.
That's incredible. Two Shark Tank winners, folks. All right. So that you talked a little bit about ideation. When we get past that step and we start looking at entrepreneurship, are you going to be teaching them about the nuts and bolts of, say, things like applying for small business loans, all that sort of jazz?
Yeah, we're going to get into the financing of it. So we go from ideation to actually crafting your solution. What does that look like? And then everybody wants to get into sort of where do you sell it? Everyone wants to get into retail. We don't recommend that. Let me give you a reason why. Is because let's say you somehow crack the code and get into Walmart.
Okay.
Well, now Walmart becomes your biggest buyer and right. your biggest liability. So if 99% of your products are sold at Walmart.
And then they don't sell well. Now you've got a lot of stuff sitting on the shelf.
And they'll say, come and get it. We're not paying for it. Oh. And what are you going to do? We also get into things like, okay, you created something and there may already be a patent.
Right.
What should you do? Generally what happens, you'll see this a lot. Generally what happens is that there are a lot of patents out there. Patents are easier these days because all you have to do is change your company less. It's about 10% or change the device about 10, whatever it is, about 10%, 10 to 20%. And you can avoid any patent issues. There's different types of patents, but oftentimes we see that someone has a very similar product or same, and you've got a you may be violating their patent. Generally, what happens you'll see is that company won't restrict you; they'll license you to sell your product under their patent license.
Okay.
So, rising tide lifts all boats, right?
Right, because they've got a patent, they want to make money on it, right?
Okay, I can see
so
that.
So we'll go from the ideation stage to the, you've ideated something. Now you got to create a solution, and then you've got to sell your solution, and then we're going to talk about how to fund it or finance it. Some of it will be bank financing may not be available to you as an early stage company, just because the ratios and banks look for are not available, yeah. But there's angel investing. This crowdfunding, we're going to go through all the ways to fund your company. What we try to do is get our customers, and this gets into, let me step back. One of the things that I think entrepreneurs get wrong a lot, and this is one of the second things I see all the time, is that first one is they fall in love with their solution, not the problem. Second one is they price it too low. Because
really,
no,
I would think price too high because they think it's such a great product.
No, they're pricing. They have no idea how to price. Most entrepreneurs, no idea how to price things. They usually price it too low. And the reason why I say this is because at the very early stage of your innovation, of your company, what you're trying to do is find product market fit, right? You want to find out who it is, and you want to see how much you can sell this for, because you have to fund the entire thing. Mm. So your initial funding will come from revenues that will generate profits. So you have to sell profitably. So having customers and going out of business doesn't make any sense. So if you have a, you should be impatient for profits at the very beginning. When we teach this to our companies, they literally, they transform overnight. They have fewer customers, but more profitable customers. And then those more profitable customers actually fund the business. So we're going to get, we'll get into all of this, the reasons why, the formulas to show that, like a pricing formula that we believe works better. So we're going to give all the tools, all the resources to show you, look, here's how to do this. Here's how to crack this code. And here's what most people do wrong. And those are the two things we see. One, falling in love with a solution that literally there's, I mean, okay, great solution, but there's eight people that may want to buy this. The problem's not big enough. Or, you know, you've fallen in love with this. Now you can't change it. So, you know, we've got to make some changes for the marketplace. And then you got to get to what we call product market fit. The majority of the people who are going to buy, 64% of the people that are going to buy your product are somewhere in this sort of design, somewhere in this. You have to find them as quickly as possible. In my experience, that's a three-year journey to find product market fit. I'll give you just a brief sort of summary of that. So you can't go past product market fit, and here's why. Let's say you have $1 million in revenue, but it comes from all like 25 different organizations, and in those organizations, it comes from 100 different types of buyers.
Okay.
It's hard to focus your marketing on that.
Yeah, because they're all different and too spread out. Yeah.
So you don't know why. So those companies who are buying it, they may be early adopters or early innovators. They may be there's what's called the theory of law of diffusion of innovation. So, or the theory of innovation or diffusion of innovation. And what it says is that the very early part of your sales will come from people who have low risk. They literally just want to try it. They want to be the first, just want to try it, yeah. Right? So, but they're not the ones that actually will make
your company.
Continue
with it. They're just more like, ooh, what's the newest thing? And then as soon as that you're no longer the newest thing, they're not interested in you.
Yeah, so that's 16% of companies we call the early adopters, right? We've got to find out who they are, and then we got to use that group as referrals and reference to get to the 64%.
The people who will actually be loyal customers and continue to come back.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you may get all 16%, but this is what we call crossing the chasm. There's this chasm between 16 and 24%, right, that we have to cross. We've got to get there. So you could have $1 million in revenue and go out of business the next month. It's possible because everyone that was going to buy already bought. So now, but we'll get into, there's a lot to this. We'll get into it and make it so easy to understand and give advice to people. So this is so simple for you guys. Just avoid these problems at first. Fall in love with solutions. Fall in love with problems, not solutions. Here's how you price this, how you should do it. Here's how you prototype it. Here's how you sell it. We'll get into all that. And then as we grow, we'll tell people, okay, this is a seed round. Here's what seed round funding looks like. And here's who it comes from. And then how much equity to give away in your seed round so you don't get diluted and have somebody else owning the company. We're going to get into that too.
Now, the training is, I noticed, four stages. Do you have to do all four? Like, can you just be like, I really feel like I've got the ideation stage down. I really just want to focus on this one. Or do you have to do it all in one go?
No, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do all four stages. If you're at the point where I've got a successful company, we need some funding. You know, we're looking for venture funding.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can come to that and we'll get you well equipped to be able to go in, to create your package, to go in and pitch for venture funding, either through angel investors. Angel investors are usually high net worth individuals mm-hmm. who just want to invest. We'll show you exactly how to do that. We'll bring legal resources. We'll bring tools that you can use. I'll tell you one of the tools. So, angel investing is interesting because you have to come up with a valuation. And people are not very good at understanding what valuations are. Valuations are very subjective, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's your company worth? It's what I decide it's worth. Mm-hmm. Right? Then I have to prove it, right?
Yeah.
Revenues help prove it. Profitability helps prove it. All those things help prove it, you know. But at some point, you're going to have to be able to say, you know, I'm looking for $200,000, you know, for 10% of my company. At that point, we know what your valuation is. We just do the math. Okay, it's a $100 million valuation. You're looking for $200,000. I own 10%. So we know what the, or $2 million, whatever the valuation is, right? Now, how do you document that? And what if somebody actually disagrees with you? Said, look, I don't think it's worth, I want to give you the money, but I don't think it's worth, you know, $1 million valuation. How do you do that?
Yeah, this is where Shark Tank has made stuff like that accessible to the common person, because I only understand what you're saying because I've watched that show.
Yeah, so we're going to make it easy for people to understand how to defend their valuations and what to ask for. So giving up too much, if you can imagine this, giving up too much equity in the early financing or the early funding of your business will actually put you at a huge disadvantage in the later stage mm-hmm. as your company grows, because let's say every funding round, you're going to have to give up at least 20%. So your first funding round, you give up 20%. The next funding round is 20%. Now you've given up 40% of the company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 50%, once you give that up, once whoever owns 51% of the company, they have control.
Yeah.
So you may need three funding rounds. That's 60% of the company. So how you're going...
Yeah, then it's not yours anymore. And then you run into that... Yeah, I mean, I know it was a whole different system, but like the guy who owned Tetris didn't actually own it and never got money from it. You know, it's that weird,
yep.
like you made it, but you don't get money from it.
Yeah, that's
weird.
Exactly what happened too. I was an 80s kid. I used to love playing Dungeons & Dragons. That's what happened to the guy who created that game, Gary Gygax. He was making a fortune, but he kept giving away little bit at a time. And all of a sudden, he lost control of the company and they just said, we'll see you later.
That hurts.
It happens all the time. I see it all the time. Like, and sometimes founders are so focused on growing the company, you know, keeping your things. They don't, it's what's called a cap table or capitalization table. They don't know how much people owe or own of their cap table. And I've seen cap tables. I'm like, hey, I have to tell you something. You own less than 3% of your own company, you know? And they're like, are you serious? I'm
it's
like, yes.
It's got to be an eye opener.
And they're like, how did that happen? And it gets really confusing very fast. Mm-hmm. So you want to keep it simple. And my whole sort of rule is, look, if I can't explain it to somebody and you're like, and that somebody being like a five-year-old and they don't get it, then, you know,
it's
like I don't get it, right? You know what I mean? I don't know what I'm talking about. So it should be really easy for people to understand it. It's just basic, I mean, math. And if it becomes too confusing, just don't do it. Like, if you don't understand it, don't do it.
Speaking of something everybody can understand, when you were talking earlier about the crossing the chasm, it made me think of Joseph Campbell and sort of the hero's journey, which made me think of something we had mentioned earlier before we started the podcast about the entrepreneur's journey. Can you tell us a little bit about that, what that means?
Yeah, it's literally, don't sign up for it. If you look, if you knew what you were signing up for, you would never do it. Never do it. It is this beautiful series of failures every day. Like literally, and it's the most exhilarating and frustrating. You want to quit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like it is like you think you got it and you don't. So it is this, it is the most exciting, terrifying thing you can ever do. But I'll tell you, like, what's so powerful, when this is why people, you go into a restaurant and you go to places and you'll see there's a dollar framed.
Yes, because that's the first dollar they made as a company, right?
It's like, look, I did it. I controlled my own destiny, and that's the dollar that they frame. It's so powerful, so liberating. You know, it's such a like a great feeling, and that's why people do it, right?
Yeah, that totally speaks to me. The first time I wanted to be a writer more than anything. Still working on that, by the way. First time I sold a piece of writing and got paid for it, you can bet that check is framed at my house.
It's awesome. It is the acknowledgement of your talents, your God-given talents. It's acknowledgement of your ideas. Like, it's acknowledgement that someone's willing to pay for your ideas. And that's so powerful, so liberating. It's hard to go back, like, when you do that. But it's the journey is so challenging. I don't wish sort of these things on people, but... It's, you know, it's a courageous few who say, I want to do this. I want to come. I want to do this. I have this idea. I can't sleep at night. This thing is my, there's never a good time. I tell people, they're like, I'm not sure. I'm like, look, there's never a good time. You know what I mean? People are like, I'm like, there's never a good time to get married. There's never
have
a good
kids.
Time. Kids. There's never a good time.
Yeah.
Never.
If you try and plan it, it will never
happen. It'll never happen.
Let's go. You know, pull the trigger. Let's go. Drive in, like both feet and be all in. And then, at some point, like, it just takes over. And I think there's times, you know, it's not working. And then what do you do? You can always take a knee. right? You can always, like, you know, shut it down and try over. But to my mind, there's absolutely no failure in being an entrepreneur. You cannot gain this experience and lessons and insights anywhere else, save for doing it. You have to do it. And when you do it, then, like, you're better equipped the next time. Most venture capital firms, they want to know how many failures you have had.
Because that shows that you've learned. Yeah.
You're experienced.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That's how I learn best is, like, you know, you go to a training, but it's like, okay, now can I actually do it? Because that's how I learn best is, like, okay, how do I find the shortcuts in this, you know, new software program or whatever? Because it's like, oh, okay, now that I've got my hands on it, now I understand it better.
It's scary. Like we mentioned before we started, like, you know, prior to doing this, I became a professional author. You know, wrote for HarperCollins, published a number of books, and one of the things that's really interesting is that you'll see this, or you'll experience this one time, Patrick, when you do publish it, it's on Amazon. You know, when someone pays their $20, they can say whatever they want, right? They give you the review, right. But that's the scariest, most exhilarating thing, right? That those critics who will tell you, right? Your customers are critics, and some of that is, like, they don't like your stuff, like, you know, it's happened, right? And you can look at it two ways. You know, you're wrong, or you know what? You're right. And I do need to, thanks, I'll make it better. It's that experience for entrepreneurs to go out and sell it. It's never going to be ready, by the way. Your Patrick, your work will never be ready. You're never going to be ready to publish it, but you're going to have to publish it.
Auden famously said, no poem was ever finished, just abandoned.
Yes, exactly. But here's the thing. Most people, it's never ready. You have to do it when you're not ready. You have to sell it, even though it's not perfect. You have to do it because what we need is objective, ruthless feedback. We need that. And what I find is entrepreneurs, they want the software. Oh, we need this new feature. And I'll say, well, who asked for the feature and who's paying for it? Well, I just think, no. Until someone says, I need this and they're willing to pay for it, then we make it. Here, let me just drill down on software because this is one that's become very challenging for people. There's what's called software as a service. Are you familiar with that term?
Mm-mm.
So software as a service is a very simple product, right? We all download it and use it. Any customer relationship management system or CRM system is SaaS, right? So SaaS is this product that it's uniform. It's got features and that's it. So, like, everyone uses it. And I know you guys have all downloaded some type of software system. Once you start to customize it, put other features in that only this customer wants or that customer wants, it's no longer software as a service. It's a customized solution for that customer. You can't scale that.
Right, because it's different for everyone.
It's different for everyone. And then what are you going to, like, when everyone has, you know, I wanted it to do this, I want to do that. Well, guess what? It doesn't do that. It only does this. If you want it to do that, go find somebody else because you can't scale it being customized for everybody. So
yeah, you try and make everybody happy, you end up making no one happy.
You get one customer, and then what happens is that customer says, you know what? We don't like this. We're going to go somewhere else. We're not going to use it anymore. Most software programs that are SaaS programs, accounting programs, are software as a service programs. Like, all those are. But when people, founders who want to customize their software for a client, now remove themselves from consideration of funding or venture financing because you've customized it and no one else will buy that customization, only the customer you're working with. Therefore, we cannot scale. So you're no longer a software as a service. You are a customized software solution for XYZ client.
So when I was reading Stephen King's book on writing a while back, he talked about, you were talking about the failures. They want to know how many failures you've had. He was talking about how many rejection slips he had gotten in the early stages of his writing career and how he used to just pin every single one right up on the wall and look at them every day while he was writing. It was a badge of honor to him, each one.
Yeah, I mean, same experience as a writer, right? My first book was rejected by everybody. And finally picked up by an imprint of HarperCollins. But, you know, I could say not only publishers rejected me, but agents rejected me. I thought I had a story that needed to be told. You know, I was passionate about it, and no one else did.
But it's that feedback. It's that that vicious objective feedback that you were talking about, which brings me to another aspect of this program, the demo days. So this is an opportunity for them to kind of get their product out there in front of people and maybe get some of that well-needed feedback. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that works?
Yeah, so demo day is not a pitch for money. It's a demonstration of the value you created with your product or service, right?
Okay.
So, and I think it's important. Like, I have these working definitions for everything in my life. So, like, they're all working definitions because I don't think any of them are going to, like, stick, right? But they're working definitions. So I have this idea about value, and I hope you guys can appreciate this. Value, I believe, is created when we remove a specific limitation for a customer.
Okay.
In a way that wasn't possible before, or to the extent no or few others can do it.
I can see that, yeah.
I don't think it's about we get a lot for a little value. I don't think that's what it is. I think we all want, life to be easier. We see value in removing limitations from our lives, our obstacles for our lives. So I think that's my 2025 working definition of value, right? And I think that, so when you say, okay, that sounds great, Robert. Okay. Where would you focus on to do that? Great question. So I've thought through this a lot, as you can probably tell. And I think value resides in mainly two areas in 2025. I think it's value. I think people find value in receiving things fast.
Yes, in today's world, for sure.
That's the Amazon success story.
Yeah, I think that's it. Exactly. So I think we don't want to wait in grocery lines. We don't want to wait in lines.
DoorDash. This is everything.
That's it.
Yeah.
I think we find a lot of value in that, right? Because we value our time. So waiting is it frustrates us, right?
100%. Yeah, I remember my father telling me when I was young, he was trying to explain to me what working was when I was a little boy. Mm-hmm. He said, you trade your time for money. And I remember saying, why would anyone ever do that?
But he's right. So, and we don't, but look, I'll give this example. If you go to a restaurant and the food is fantastic, but it takes like an hour to come out, I'm not going back.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not. And then I think that this other area that value resides, I don't think that, I think we want things easy. I don't think we want to put a lot of effort in, mm-hmm. right? I think we just wanted to show up. And I think you've said Amazon, like, I'll prove to you why I think this is true. I got Amazon Prime,
Mm-hmm.
You do too.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's funny. I worked for Barnes & Noble for a long time. I worked for Barnes & Noble for 25 years, and they were our nemesis. They were the evil empire.
Yes.
And that I told myself, never will I have an Amazon account. What happened? I have an Amazon account. Because like you said, you get it tomorrow.
Yes.
It's easy. It's fast.
So that's where value resides. So when you can, for your customers, if you can deliver it easy with effortless, right, and it removes that obstacle for them, boy, that's a huge value. And guess what? I don't think that people are price sensitive. To prove it, like, we can get it for free, but we don't have Prime, but we pay more for Prime. So the only thing that beats free is fast.
Mm.
So, but demo day is this idea. Okay, I have this other idea about like our futures, right? I think our futures are largely dependent on really four things: our ability to speak, our ability to write, or at least convey lucid ideas, the quality of our ideas, and I have formulas for all this, by mm-hmm. the way, and you can tell I'm like a professor, right? I have all these weird formulas, and kids are like, what is that? I'm like, don't worry about it. And then the quality of your network, and that's why we're going to have a lot of guest speakers come in, because I want our entrepreneurs to have a network of people.
Yeah, because sometimes it's about who you know just as much as what you know.
Yeah, who you know to open doors, and hey, look, am I out of my mind right now? Like, can you look at this and tell me the truth? And I've got a list of people who have agreed to come to participate with me at this, who will be those mentors and guides to the participants and from Peoria in this, that will give that advice and be the guides and mentors to entrepreneurs. We talked about this before we came in. One of the things, like, I have had so many great mentors in my life. Just so many people have leaned into me, were honest with me, just told me, like, yeah, they were able to give me advice that I took and wasn't offended by it.
Mm.
And it occurred to me that the only way, I can never repay them for the graciousness they showed me. And, even though I had, was ill-tempered at times, and it occurred to me the only way that I can ever repay them is to be as gracious and open and resourceful to other people as they were to me. And so the idea that, you know, these entrepreneurs that, and I think all the entrepreneurs will bring in to be guest speakers at this, they all feel that way, that they want to give back to entrepreneurs.
They want to pay it forward too.
Yeah. There's this kinship, right? Of entrepreneurs. We're the risk takers, right? It's a tribe of like, we are such misfits. You know what I mean? We're just not like,
it's normally the ones, that don't fit in the box because they're able to see a different solution that, they may not have fit in, quote unquote, when they were younger, but now it's like, okay, now I found my people.
That's it. Those are the ones. Like, we literally, one of the things about entrepreneurs, we don't like status quo. Like, we're trying to disrupt that. Like, the status quo is not what we're trying to come up with, something better. So, I mean, it's just a tribe of misfits that, like, you have these ideas that you think are crazy and you believe them until everybody else believes them. But look, I say this all the time. Like, when we were growing up, I mean, I'm the age where, like, you know, you can talk on your watch, right? Like, that was Dick Tracy. That was science fiction.
Yes.
Like, and if you said that to people back in 1970s, right, they'd be like, you're out of your mind, right? But now it's like, oh, you can do it, right? So these ideas that that entrepreneurs come up with, they're not so far-fetched. They can come true. You just have to believe in them and work towards it, right?
That's so true. I read a book a while ago. It was called The Dreams Our Stuff Is Made Of, and it was about the way that a lot of science fiction authors had kind of predicted the future technology.
Yeah, it's beautiful, right, that you can actually have a vision for this, believe in it, and work towards that vision to have something birth into the universe that never exist before.
Well, so that's like poetry.
It is like poetry or writing. Like, this never exists. You're creating something. But one of the things that's really challenging for people is that I think that for some people, a blank page
is terrifying.
Right? Getting up in public and speaking, terrifying.
Yeah, that's the number one fear.
But you're going to, that's it. And then, but in this, we're going to ask you, I'm going to ask you, hey, look, I got you guys. We're going to do this thing. Like, you're going to have to get comfortable being really uncomfortable.
So these are some great resources that you're telling us about and letting us know. So how exactly does a budding entrepreneur come part of this training? Like, what process do they need to do? Because they've been listening to this podcast and I'm like, yes, that sounds like something I want to do.
Yeah, one of the reasons we wanted to get you in so quickly was the deadline's coming up, right, for the application?
Yeah, the deadline's coming up, so it'll end soon. But the idea is that you can go, we'll get a link, I think, on the podcast where you can go and register.
Yes.
The City of Peoria has a link on their website. You can register. So we're taking 30 entrepreneurs in. So we'll have 30 for each session. So it may ebb and flow, starting in April, then again in June, then again in August, and then in October. So it'll be every other month.
But now, can you only apply the one time?
No, you can apply from all if you
like. Okay.
Candidly, I don't want to reject anybody who wants to come in. If they need help as an entrepreneur in the City of Peoria, and this is really important for the city, you know, we have two ways we can grow. We can go and attract, and we have. And I think that the mayor here has done a tremendous job. He's just done, you know, really done a stellar job of growing what I think is the version of a city that the future needs. But he's done an amazing job of attracting the Taiwan Semiconductors, you know, these large corporations, right? But what about the small entrepreneurs?
Moms and pops.
What about them? Because they're the ones that will help. I know Taiwan Semiconductor and many other companies here will hire a lot of people. But we can't forget, and by the way, the heartbeat of this community will be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So the idea is that we will equip those entrepreneurs. So those entrepreneurs who just, look, I'm starting a home-based business, or I have a restaurant, or I'm thinking about a software company, those ones will have a link in the show. You can go to the City of Peoria website. You can sign up. But those entrepreneurs will give you the resources that you need, the training and advice that you need to crack the code to grow your company, or to figure out, hey, is this a good idea or not? And we'll go through the ideation. We have an ideation process. We'll go through, here's how you find the next big idea. We have a process to do that.
Yeah, those moms and pops are so important. I'm from Jersey originally, you know, and back there when I first moved out here, I couldn't believe how many chains there were and how few independent businesses there really were. And, you know, that's what gives your city character. That's what you, like you said, it's the kind of the heartbeat of the whole community.
Yeah, that's like there are companies or mom and pops, whether it's a coffee shop, a restaurant, but you know, they maybe say, look, this is great. We want to scale. How do we do this? We can, we'll show you how to franchise. Like, how do you wrap this into a franchise? We'll tell you how to fund it. So, but all the mom and pop, I don't want to say there's a term that's used, and it's sort of in the sort of investment or venture community, they call it a lifestyle business, which means it's a single founder usually who's created a company that generates some decent revenue, but it's not really something that you would invest in as a venture capital firm or as an investor. I love those companies. If we can help you create a lifestyle company where you're employing yourself and maybe your family or others, right? And it's generating like $500,000 or, you know, $1 million a year, and you know, and you could pay yourself a couple $100,000 a year, hey, you know,
yeah,
why not?
Power to you.
That those are great companies. Many of those companies end up morphing into larger companies that become venture funded companies and grow. So, but the idea, if you're considering this, if you're an entrepreneur in the city of Peoria, if you're new to the city of Peoria, if you're interested at all in sort of entrepreneurship, growing company, venture capital, angel investing, any of that, this is the place to come. And we want to make this, I want to make Peoria the place for entrepreneurs to come from across the globe. If you want to be an entrepreneur, like this is, you want to be a digital nomad, you know, you come to Peoria. There's baseball, there's great food.
Oh, right? Yeah, we got everything here. I love Peoria. It's a fantastic city. It's a great place to raise my kids. I thank my lucky stars every day that this is kind of where we ended up. I mean, it's not just the climate. It's, you know, it's something about Peoria.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's like, you know, there's like Pleasance here. There's
and it just feels like there's so many opportunities.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It just feels like this is the place, like
it's growing.
It's beautiful. It's super clean. You know, it's just really nice. So this is, but wouldn't it be great if we could make like that? This is a digital nomad hub. Like Peoria comes. If you want to be an entrepreneur, you come to Peoria. You learn. You stay here. That would be fantastic. And we have just thousands of entrepreneurs, you know, coming to Peoria to get this training and to set up shop here to grow their companies here in Peoria.
So I want to mention again, just because I think it's important, this is all free. So if you're listening out there and you're at all interested or have been thinking about starting your own business, or you already have your own business and you're looking to find ways to scale or innovate, this 4-month course through the city of Peoria is all completely free. You can sign up for this through the city's website. It's going to be a lot of opportunities and all kinds of different guest speakers, lots to learn. This is the place to come, no doubt about it. So before we sign off today, there's two more things we want to get to. One is, because we're here at the library today and we all work at the library, we love to ask our guests if there is a specific book that you read that meant a lot to you and kind of maybe shaped the person you are or the course of your journey. Anything you can think of off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I read all the time. I think it's right to read, but I'll tell you what I read every day. I read the Bible every single day. So, and it's so powerful. I find so many parallels to like entrepreneurship. One of the, like, can I just share some with you?
Absolutely.
So,
please.
I don't know if you know the story of Paul from Tarsus. Paul was, you know, St. Paul, but
Saul.
Yeah, Saul was, and he was a tent
the
maker.
Road to Damascus.
Yeah, he was a tent maker. And, you know, Paul, he was an entrepreneur. Like, he packed up his stuff. But he made tents so he could do what he believed was his mission of like spreading the word, right? I just love that about like characters in the Bible, but I read the Bible every day. I just love like, you know, I just finished Acts, right? It's a story of like, you know, and it's so suspenseful at the end, but I read every day the Bible, but I read all the time. So I must have, not only do I read physical books, but I have like, you know, I don't know how many books I have going through on my
Kindle
Audible,
Nook, whatever.
That's so funny. I never thought about Paul as an entrepreneur.
But
I have
to
admit.
He was paying his way by making tents.
And not only that, like it's that too, but Paul believed in something that, you know what I mean? He's trying to sell something that no one believed in, right? So he's the greatest entrepreneur around. Like he's trying to sell and he's using his past. He's using everything to try to sell. He's got a belief that he wants other people to believe in. So that, but that's, that, and I have a whole list of books that I like literally if I pull out my phone right now, like I'm in the middle of so many of them, right?
Yeah, I think we can all say that.
Yes.
But Yeah. So I just, I read every genre. I read every book. And then I typically try to write at least one book a year. So reading and writing at the same time, which I think informs me. So.
All right. Well, with that, let's get to the Poetry Corner, which is our increasingly popular segment, although everyone told me in the beginning that nobody was going to want the Poetry Corner. I just want that on record.
Yes.
Poetry Corner. So today we're going to, it's kind of a nice change of events, actually. Our host has chosen the poem for today.
You mean our guest. We are the host.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Our guest. That's right. That's correct. Well, we're turning the table, so I almost feel like he is the host now.
Right,
and I'm the
right.
guest because, yeah, he's going to tell us about the poem and why he selected it instead of me this time, which is a nice change of pace. So he chose The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. So we're going to go ahead and read the poem for you real quick, and then we'll ask Robert why he picked this particular poem, why he thought it was relevant to our discussion today about entrepreneurship. So here we go. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me. What is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Such a beautiful poem. Mm-hmm. Mary Oliver, fantastic poet. We were talking beforehand about Mary Oliver and Billy Collins, two of probably the most popular poets in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years. And I've read maybe three or four of Oliver's books now, and every one of her poems kind of reads like this. Every poem is kind of reaching out to you and asking you to make the most of your life, to live every day to kind of its fullest. Mm. Is that kind of what you had in mind?
That's it. Like the last line of the poem, you know, tell me what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? I mean, that's like...
Yeah, that's definitely the power punch moment of the poem.
Yeah, it's not just a question, it's a call to action.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I just love Mary Oliver. I think she's, but this poem really spoke to me. In fact, the story behind this is that when I read this poem, I was was working in financial service industry. I had a great career there. I'd worked my way up over 30 years or 20 years. And then, you know, really was feeling like I needed to do something different. Like just sort of not bored, but not
like
satisfied.
Stagnant maybe?
Stagnant. Totally. And I'd accomplished everything I wanted to do. I got to the top and I was like, wow, this is not what I thought it was going to be. Right. And then I, you know, I was reading poetry. I always like to read poetry. And I'd read this poem before, frankly, and it didn't mean as much to me. And when I got to it, it just stopped me. Mm. You know, what, you have one wild, precious life. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do? Am I going to sit in this, you know, glass office, like, you know, looking at screens and pressing buttons? You know what I mean? Is that what I want to do with my life? And the answer is, that's what I mean. It was a call to action. The answer was no. And so at that point, you know, I told my wife, I just came home and said, hey, honey, guess what? And she's like, what? And she was pregnant with our second child. I said, I got good news and bad news. And she said, well, what's the good news? And I said, well, I'm going to start a company. It's going to be great. And she said, what's the bad news? I just took 100% haircut. I'm not getting paid anymore. And but I can honestly say it was really difficult, really challenging, super stressful, but I have zero regrets about it. And I think that this poem was the sort of my call to action. You know, I don't think that Mary Oliver perhaps meant it as a call to action. I think all of her work is sort of, you know, hey, this is it. No one's getting out of here alive. What are you going to do? And this was one of them, and I think spoke to me and many others. And I think this is why this poem, The Summer Day by Mary Oliver, is so popular. Is because it does speak to so many people. And when she describes the grasshoppers, like, we are uniquely made, like the grasshopper. You know, we talks about his jaws. It moves, you know, not up and down, but left and right.
Yeah, so. I love that part of the poem. Not just any grasshopper, this grasshopper, right?
Yes.
We're all unique.
Right. Mm. It was just, so that really speaks to me. But the reason why I thought this was perfect for entrepreneurs is like, we are all this grasshopper, right? This weird, like, we're that grasshopper, right? This weird, like, alien. And you know what I mean? And we're called.
Think of Kane from Kung Fu.
Yeah, we're called to do something that's so bizarre. And, like, you know, we have these ideas that we've been institutionalized not to do, like, since we're in. Like, we were all artists in kindergarten. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, now we've been told, like, learn this and repeat it.
Yeah.
Like, we've been
told.
A lot
of people lose the wonderment of childhood as they go into adulthood. And that's always my sadness is to see that. It's like, oh, you know, the wonder of a child, the creativity, the kids in our Lego club, the stories they come up with the creation they built. It's like, oh, you need to be writing movies for Hollywood. Like, their creativity is
awesome.
Fantastic.
And by the way, like, after that, we institutionalize them, beat it out of them. Say,
yeah,
hey, you know.
It really is terrible. I applaud you for taking that step. It comes back to what we were talking about earlier about courage and the willingness to kind of step off the cliff or across that chasm. You know, you don't know what's going to happen, but it's exciting too, right?
It is exciting.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing this poem, because I know poetry is subjective, but it's really interesting that it you chose it because it was so powerful, because I think that that is what good poetry does, is that it makes you stop and think and reflect and hopefully, like in your case, actually do something and do something positive with it. So
yeah, and just a small paragraph, it really, you don't have to read a whole book. Right. And that's I think what poetry does. I mean, every sonnet is a poem, but this one really spoke to me. And I think that I love the idea of poetry being the inspiration for entrepreneurship. And this one in particular, like, I think is every entrepreneur is a poet. You're creating something really unique. You're synthesizing
it
into something really powerful. And so this one in particular, I'd like to claim this is like my inspiration for entrepreneurship, right? And I'd like to think I'm that grasshopper, right?
I don't think there's any better way to end this podcast than with that thought. It's been such a pleasure having you here today, Robert.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for telling us about the program. Thank you so much for sharing your time and for paying it forward and giving this opportunity to all the entrepreneurs out there who I'm sure are getting as excited about this program as I was getting today, just listening to you talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Peoria, for listening.
All right, folks. That's the end of our podcast for today. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another one. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Bye. Hello, what's up, Peoria? This is Jenny, otherwise known as Commissioner Gordon, and I wanted to tell you about some fun things that are happening right here in the city of Peoria. First up, spring training is just around the corner. Peoria residents can save at least 25% on every ticket purchased. You do have to limit 4 tickets and proof of residency is required, but it's still a sweet deal. Just go to PeoriaSportsComplex.com, click on the spring training link to find out more. You'll see game promotions for Kids Run the Bases, Bark at the Park, Educator, or even Medical Professional Appreciation Days. And my personal favorite, Book It to the Ballpark, where libraries and baseball are joined together. So just go to the PeoriaSportsComplex.com/spring-training to learn more. If you like volunteering and baseball, you could become part of the Peoria Diamond Club. They are seeking volunteers this year. They're the red shirts you see around helping with parking, selling the 50-50 raffle tickets, and you could volunteer with them. Just go to PeoriaDiamondClub.org/volunteers. One really cool thing they offer is the Peoria Diamond Club Partner Program. This is where they help local youth organizations raise funds. So if you're looking for a fundraiser for your school organization, go to PeoriaDiamondClub.org/volunteers. Volunteers do need to be at least 16 years old. It's one adult chaperone per 4 volunteers. And volunteers will work 1 4-hour shift. But the great thing then is the partner organization will receive $45 for each 4-hour shift worked. So, for example, if 10 volunteers worked one shift, they would receive $450 for their partner group. So it's a win-win kind of a deal. So go to PeoriaDiamondClub.org/volunteers. For a fun free thing around town, TheaterWorks is offering a global sound series. This is where different music genres are highlighted at the Peoria Center for Performing Arts, and you can hear all this music for free. You do have to get tickets because seating is limited, so just go to theaterworks.org/events, and you can hear Gabriel Bay on February 12th, The McHales on March 19th, or Ashton and Pan Ecstasy Caribbean Band on April 16th. Remember, just go to theaterworks.org/events to get your tickets. And it's free! Another fun free thing is Light at Play. This is that interactive art experience that shows up at Osuna Park, and it'll be happening this year from March 6th through 8th. Now, one thing that we're going to be switching up this year is how we are experiencing the art. It's going to be more projection art this year, but it's still going to be interactive, and we're going to be adding a music element. Each night of the three nights, their Light at Play will be at Osuna Park. There will be a performer, and each night, the performer will be highlighting a different music genre. So you can experience art with even more senses at Light at Play at Osuna Park on March 6th through 8th. Lastly, I wanted to highlight an event we talked about on this very podcast back in the fall. It's Astronomy in the Park with our friends of the West Valley Astronomy Club. You can do the solar viewing from 10 to 11 a.m. by the Res Ramada, or you can do the moon and star party from 6:30 to 8:30 in the Southeast Dog Park of Paloma Community Park. West Valley Astronomy Club will be bringing their awesome telescopes so that friends and family members can come out and ignite some curiosity about the cosmos and explore the wonders of the universe through these high-grade telescopes. So view the sun, moon, planets with Astronomy in the Park on Saturday, March 8th. So whether you're booking it to the ballpark for some spring training, volunteering with the Peoria Diamond Club, experiencing music at our Global Sounds series, or even Light at Play, or seeing the stars at the Astronomy in the Park on March 8th. We hope to see you around town. Until next time, this is Jenny from What's Up Peoria.
Thanks for listening to the What's Up Peoria podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. If you'd like to connect with our team, please email us at whatsuppeoria@peoriaaz.gov. Until next time, this is What's Up Peoria.